Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Stark Girl Squadcast. I'm Cameron.
I'm Tam. I'm not a diva.
Adiba is once again not here. She is doing schoolwork or something responsible. And today we're going to be talking about frenemies. What do we even say? It's been we skipped
we're
a week.
We're talking about
frenemies, chapter 11, the haunting.
Yeah, that.
And this episode was another controversial one I've seen. Perhaps the most controversial one I've seen in terms of response. I feel like there was a lot of mixed
there was a lot of expectations going into this episode, I think.
Yes.
I think before we got our special reveal of who was haunting Blue Valley, there was a lot of speculation and a lot of anticipation for it to be Jordan, and it is Jordan. However, what that means and what he was going to do, I think, didn't exactly play out the way that people have been imagining it to be. So I feel like people have been debating the worth or the value of even having this happen, I guess.
I still don't really know how I fully feel about this plot point. I think still at face value, I'm not a fan of it. However, I don't think that this was a bad episode by any means. And I think that especially on the rewatch of the episode, this is an episode that kind of sits with you because there's a lot of moments that are just like super uncomfortable.
Yes.
And like,
well, it's because Jordan McKent is back, aka Gaslighter Extreme. Mm-hmm. And every single second he is on screen, he's gaslighting it up.
He's the Merriam-Webster word of the year for 2022. He's a gaslighter. But yeah, no, I don't know. There's him. There's everything that's happening with Artemis. So obviously she's like doing a lot of like screams and crying and like, which like very good job on Stella Smith's part. Like she was definitely the MVP of the episode, but it's very
heavy,
uncomfortable.
Yes.
And then like Cameron is also very uncomfortable this episode. Both in terms of on the receiving and giving end.
And not to be the one to bring this up, but it's going to have to be me. Also, like, Rick's absence is also slightly uncomfortable given what everything else is going on. Yeah.
I really was on team Jordan kidnapped him, but it seems like that's not true. And that's so sad. It feels like ages ago, though.
Yeah.
That I was really championing for that. It was like almost 2 weeks ago at this point because we did obviously take a break a week off in filming this podcast, and it's been
a hot
week
minute
and a half about since the last one. So
we can talk about the Jordan kidnapping Rick theory that we had when we get to that part.
I mean, yeah, the very end, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's still technically possible.
Yeah.
But I feel like probably not, considering that we have the stills for the following
But we don't know what led to the stills, which is what's interesting.
That's true. But I feel like that's going to come pretty early in the episode.
Yeah.
Actually,
that's
the one that we don't know about because they're not actually stills.
Yeah,
they're production shots.
The possibility that we're getting a scene in a hospital with Beth because of that one behind the scenes picture that's like, we can't pinpoint exactly where it is, but it looks like the wall that they use for the hospital. But also she's there with her stunt devil, which is a little bit interesting
because
it looks like she's suiting up that for next episode, which is
It's definitely in the next episode
that
she would be in that room, whatever that room might be. So,
but it also could, this is also not confirmed that she is suiting up unless they go into
unless they filmed a block at a time,
or unless episode 13 they're wearing the same clothes as episode 12.
That's possible as well,
like it's the same day.
So I guess we should just start out with it. So this episode once again begins with a flashback that is way too long in my opinion. I don't know why they started it that far back, because like everybody's going to remember that Jordan was the big bad of season one. Like, I don't think there's anybody who's watching Stargirl season three that hasn't seen season one. So, like, also, I get why you would want to show the shattering.
Yeah. But, like, it felt like a different angle of that they used for that. For some of
I
it.
Agreed. I thought that some of it looked different.
Like, for example, but even like the way that they shot like the hug and everything like that, it was like a different angle.
It felt, yeah. Like, I mean, when his hand is on the ground.
Yeah, every like and his I perspective felt like that... of yeah. Because even like the way, even like the angle of like the JSA like coming apart from their hug, I was like, I feel like I have
well,
not
everything,
seen it.
Watching it in this manner and not in the manner that it showed, because when I was watching it, I was like, that celebration is the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. If that is genuinely how it is in the HBO Max cut of the finale. I feel like I have to pull it up. I feel like I have to pull it up right now very briefly to like double check.
But I did, like, I know, like, it's not exactly like that, because for example, like, when I, this is me sound crazy, but I've analyzed that hug and I've scoured it for like Aronite hints, right? And it's like, it was mm-hmm. literally just Rick's arm is already around Beth, and then he like came around for Yolanda, and then Courtney joined in. But here in this angle, you see that his arm is like fully around Beth as they're breaking apart, and like it's still around her, and I'm like, oh, that's new. And I noticed that new angle in the second.
Hold on,
like,
I'm right.
Yeah.
I opened it and I was right there. We got Starcat falling down, and they.
It's definitely a little
okay,
bit different.
Okay, so you get more
you get
of Pat.
Yeah,
you get more in Pat and Barbara getting pulled up. There's not the close-up shot of Icicle on the ground.
Right, of course not. Yeah,
like you don't see that. He's just kind of there. And then Starcat hugs, and he gets up, and they're like, oh gosh, no. And then Mike runs him over, and they're shocked, and he says, oh, am I gonna be in the JSA? And the dog barks. Oh, and then Sir Justin is there. Yeah, there's more time between the celebration. But now it's still pretty immediate. Yeah. It's still pretty immediate, her running up to get the staff, and then hugging. Like, this is, in watching this,
it's like, he's dead! And then they all go, yay! And
like,
yeah, it's funny. And then they
like,
kiss.
It's pretty funny. It's pretty funny. Like, what? Mike just killed a man.
It's like, Mike just killed a man, and then Pat and Barbara start making out on a roof.
Barbara later, she's like, I watched you die. Did you? Or did you just start making out? Husband.
But
no, it's wild. I don't know why they did that. I mean, I do know why.
Oh,
they
but
did
I enjoy it.
It completely went over my head upon watching it. Like, watching it in the context of season one, it doesn't bother me at all. But watching it in this rushed, abridged flashback formation, it mm-hmm. was just like, huh? Like, tonally, it did not make sense to me. But we're spending way too much time on that because
I
that's
know,
not even
I know,
this
it's
episode.
Not important at all.
But once again, we are seeing that the water cycle theory is canon. He's like, he just kind of like congeals and then goes in a little sewer grate. And that's all the context that we're given, really, for those early days, besides from when later he's like, I didn't have a consciousness. And then
and
I was
and
in a dreamlike state. And then I did. But it's like, I don't even know if he's like telling the truth
right,
about
we don't
that
get
because,
a timeline.
Like, we don't know.
We don't get a timeline for that. Also, his story changed. His story changed, actually, throughout the episode, too, because he's like, oh, I've been, like, just dealing with my... Okay, I'm not phrasing it properly, but the thing that I find so weird is that when they cut to Jordan right at the beginning, you have him look at his hand, and he just, like, wills it into, like, completion.
Right.
So it's like,
yeah,
are you sure
I
that, like,
thought...
isn't it convenient that you finally finish forming in your little ice, like, therapy suit on the exact day that you decide to reveal your, like...
Well, I think that he probably decided that he was going to reveal himself after he did that, but I think he knew that he was near completion and therefore could probably get away with being bold. I mean, at the very least, he looked mostly human except for his hand. So you could get away with wearing gloves. You could be like, the accident severely damaged my hand and I need to wear this glove now so that it, like, it was, like, there's, like, I'm self-conscious about it. Like, you could say that.
Technically, he could have used that to guilt trip them even more. Like, if he showed up half, like, malformed, he would have been like, can't you see? I'm literally just coming back from the ice, and I'm still not even fully in with it, but, like, I'm, whatever. Yeah,
I don't know. I don't even know what the implication of that was. Like, does he have to kill people and turn them to ice, and then part of their ice goes into his ice? Like, I don't... I am forever confused with the ice physiology, and it seems that Jordan also is confused with the ice physiology when he's talking to Barbara later. He's like, apparently I can turn into ice. And it's like you didn't know?
Yeah, like, you already are an ice man. What do you think
was happening?
Like, have you ever looked in a mirror when you were, like, fully blue? Because, you were fully ice. Like,
So, you know.
I guess he truly didn't know he could melt. He was like, I'm water cycles wild, Barbara. I can melt. I can evaporate. I can be condensation. I can do anything.
We go over to Courtney, and most of the JSA / JSA adjacent people, Beth is not there, which I think that presumably she's, like, trying to find Rick, but they don't establish that.
No.
So it's weird that she's missing.
It's weird.
Especially considering that she's there later in all of those scenes.
She's also missing at the very end, too, which I also found weird. So I am convinced. I know that people are like people have different opinions about what happened. They think that she just got left out. But I am going to be adamant about the fact that she clearly had been doing something. Like, she was up to something in the beginning of the episode, at the end of the episode, for them to purposely just have her absent with no because I feel like they usually would explain it away. And they didn't bother to. So that must be deliberate. And she was, and she was actually, because when we next see the JSA, she has, like, showed up with work. So she was doing something. Mm-hmm. It's just that it wasn't, like, with the team. And this is now, no, I was going to say this is the second time, but I don't think it's the second time. It's just that, like, I don't know. It just feels like, also, knowing that the last few times Beth has tried to speak to the JSA, that they haven't really given her the chance to explain herself, I wouldn't be totally surprised if she was like, I'm going to sit this out. I could get more work done working on my own than sitting and watching everyone kind of argue about Cameron and then Sylvester argue with Pat and all that kind of stuff.
You do get kind of a little hint that Icicle is probably working with the Ultra Humanite when they're discussing how the gambler died, because they still are like, oh, it could have been a claw wound that killed him, that was when he was stabbed through the heart, or a tooth or something. But no, it was pretty likely an icicle, which is why they couldn't find the murder weapon. Although I guess a tooth also would be a murder weapon that you wouldn't necessarily be able to find. But I feel like if it was a tooth, since they had the gambler's body to look at, they would be able to tell that, like Beth's goggles would be able to tell that it was in the shape of a tooth.
The fact that
it wasn't, like, I feel like it was probably a hint that Jordan was working with him.
I really appreciate Mike in this scene.
Oh, 100%. 100%. The whole, when Courtney's like, we need the McKents, and we need Cameron. And he's like, you mean you do? Like, yeah, call her out.
You know, it's important because it's like, we have Mike so far feeling undermined because he wants to actually help. And you can tell that he can see that Courtney doesn't fully have, you know, all of the, I don't even know where my sentence is going, but she is distracted. Clearly she's been distracted for a long while. And, you know, Mike's the one who's sitting at the same breakfast table as she's texting, and, you know, totally not listening to anybody. So he must be frustrated because now she's suggesting, oh yeah, and the guy who she's interested in, who is still of his greatest fears, should be, like, joining along and mingling with them, is, like, you know, and this is before the icicle reveal. he clearly has feelings, like unresolved feelings about this. And like, yeah, it's I'm glad that Mike was the one to call her out. it's a good sibling moment. Like it felt like a natural and fun sibling moment between them where you're not feeling bad for Mike, like the way that sometimes like Courtney says something and then Mike feels bad. Like here, at least it was kind of even.
But they're interrupted by Artemis, who is at the door. I mean, it makes sense that Artemis would go to the Whitmore Dugan house since her parents are close.
I just
with
felt
them.
It took her a but long just, time to go.
It did take her a really long time. So I wonder what she was kind of up to.
But
in
I
those
think
first.
Also that she's the kind of person who wants to do everything on her own. So like not on her own, but she wants to be able to like. She wants to do it herself, or she feels like she'll have the situation handled, and she's going to probably have a hard time asking for help because she's been raised to think that she's like kind of like the best and she doesn't really need help.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it's probably pretty heartbreaking because I assume that she's like calling her parents, but she's not even getting any rings because if their phones were destroyed with their bodies, they wouldn't like it wouldn't do anything past like the nobody's here. But so we cut over to Jordan, who's like waiting outside his house. He's kind of stalking there. And it's pretty clear, or maybe not clear. I hypothesize that it's probably pretty easy to take him out at this stage in the game. I don't think that he later claims that his like powers have grown and everything like that. But like, there's no way. Like, he's, like, wincing all the time.
And Sophus.
He's sweaty.
Yeah, he's sweaty. And Sophus, like, he's giving him looks, like, from one sick man to another, I see you.
like, he doesn't look great. So, I feel like there's no chance that he's, like, actually super healthy. Like, I feel like he's one, like, tip him over in human form and he'll just crack. I don't know how that's going to play out.
I find it bizarre how easily Lily and Sophus are accepting him.
Knowing that there's like crazy things in this world. Like that could be a shapeshifter. You don't know.
No,
you're a nice monster.
It's not just that. It's more of like Lily is the one who raised Jordan. So like Jordan is playing them right now, but like Lily's the one who taught him to be that way. So like I know it's because we just got an episode of her sobbing about missing Jordan, and so that, like, her grief is blinding her, and she's just happy to see his face. But also, like, don't you pick up the tricks that you're doing with Cameron and how, Jordan's also doing that with you?
I don't know if he's necessarily playing them. I think he's definitely saying one thing in front of Cameron, but I think that it's possible that he's talking to them
behind his back.
Closed doors and more fully fleshing out his plan, at least to Lily, probably not to Sophus. But I feel like that's a possibility because I agree, it would be weird for him to pretend and endanger potentially his family further, because I don't think he would want to do that to his mother and his father and his son, like all in one fell swoop. But also at the same time, if it is a sort of deal where the Ultra Humanite is mind controlling him to some extent, which is
possible,
then yeah, it would make sense that he's lying to all of them. But it's just, it's like we genuinely don't know because we haven't had that much of the Ultra Humanite, and Jordan is just super shady all episodes.
Yeah,
so
and it's still,
I have no idea what his problem is.
It still
well, I
feels
do know what his
weird.
Problem is. But like,
it still feels weird that, you know, he was spying on his own family.
Right.
And he just straight up, he just admits it. Like, he admits it to them. Like,
well, he doesn't straight up
not,
admit
not,
it.
No,
he lets it
no,
slip.
Cameron,
and I think that
Cameron doesn't pick it up. But, like, we, the audience, we do pick it up. So, it's a little like, oh.
I also do think that it is worth noting that the family, like, definitely believes in Norse mythology. Because when Sophus sees Jordan, he's like, oh, by the gods, in Norwegian plural. So, it's like, okay, so they definitely pray to, like, the Norse gods, like,
yeah, but
that's definitely,
we knew that because they've been doing that since
we
one.
Knew that they did the
like
prayer
the
but I assumed that was like just what, like, an isolated thing. Like, I didn't necessarily connect the dots that they, like, fully believed in that pantheon. But it's like, does Cameron believe that? Is he, like...
Well, he doesn't understand, like, Norwegian, right? So, like...
Oh, it rules that they still speak in Norwegian in front of him to say stuff, and he still has no idea what's going on. And not once is he, like, angry about it. He just, like, sits there and, like, bows his head. It's like, yep, I don't know what's being said right now.
And it's like, if those are going to be your two, like, guardians, like, maybe you should start learning, like...
You can't Duolingo. If that sounded weird, I totally didn't malfunction. There was no glitch. What are you talking about? But yeah, we also do get that NYC snow globe shot, which means absolutely nothing in the now world, because, like, we're not getting anything. But I would like to believe that it implies that at some point we were either, like, theoretically going to get that Jenny and Todd in New York spinoff, or alternatively, a future season was going to be the JSA in New York, because they're in New York in the comics. That's where the brownstone is. That's where their headquarters are. So I would, like, hope that they would eventually get there. And clearly they don't. And that's fine. But, like...
Speaking of the snow globes, it is immensely creepy that the second Jordan walks into that room, he goes, huh, the snow globe that looks like Courtney Whitmer happens to be gone.
Well, he doesn't say that.
He's basically saying. He's like, huh, there's one missing. And we know the one missing is the one that Cameron broke earlier in the season, right, which was the one that looked like Courtney. And we know that he said that these snow globes are trophies that he's gotten on his business trips, which we know is actually code for on his serial murder spree. So every time, like, they're his victims. So it implies that he got one for Courtney because she was going to be his victim, as in he was going to, like, kill her.
Oh, I didn't see it like that.
No, I saw it like that.
That makes sense.
Yes, because, so, and he, the fact that he, yeah, for me, that is it. Like, well, I mean, they were planning on killing the JSA, right? So it was like, oh, Courtney's the little girl that started this mess. So he's like, oh, I'm getting a snow globe to motivate me to, you know, get rid of this little girl. And it didn't work, but he clearly has that on his mind. He's like, she's one of my victims, and she's next, kind of thing.
When he's talking about those snow globes, he mentions that collecting them is how he honors Christine, which is a lie. Like, we know that's a lie. Like, there's definitely, like, I mean, I guess it's possible.
That's not true. It is true. Because that's the point, that every time he goes to a business trip, he's killing someone.
I'm saying that the way of honoring her has nothing to do with the snow globes and everything to do with the victims.
Yeah.
But he's hiding that from Cameron still. He's not saying, I killed all these people. Like, he still hasn't admitted to doing that.
That.
Even though later on, Cameron is going to be like, you killed people. Like, he's still trying to hide most of his misdeeds from his son.
Yeah, he's like, I'm an open book. I'm so clean now. I'm going to start everything. But honestly, just take a moment to look at the number of snow globes there is in that room. Every single one of them is supposed to represent someone that he's killed. If you the thing is, we already knew he was planning on trying to kill, like, millions of people, or how many, because of what had happened with Project, you know, New America. But big numbers like that are hard to wrap your mind around. And yeah, when you go, oh, he was totally okay with mass murder, you're like, that's terrible. But if you, like, downsize that and you shove a whole bunch of snow globes in a room and you physically look at all of the snow globes in that room, which is still just a fraction of the amount of people that were going, like, of the representation of people that he was planning to kill before.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so much more than just the Crocs or Joey and William and Denise. It's from wall to wall, ceiling, not ceiling, but like a good chunk space of dead people by Jordan's hands. And it's like, I would love to see Cameron's reaction in taking in all of those snow globes and realizing, oh, and then being like, oh, whatever, and keeping going. But I still want to see that realization, you know?
Sure. I just think it's really interesting. This entire time, he does not seem impressed by anything that his dad is saying. He's just standing there. Like,
no, he's, mm-hmm. I mean, first of all, he's traumatized. This is his dead father.
Oh, 100%. He's like, I thought it was kind of funny. It's not actually funny, but he's like breathing so heavily, like when Jordan is looking at the snow globe, that like he's clearly like he's hyperventilating.
He's about to have a panic attack, which makes a lot of sense. Like you see someone who's supposed to be dead walking around, being like, ha ha ha,
it's a ghost. Right, that's now. Why it's the haunting.
Yeah, yeah,
because and it is basically a ghost.
He from the get go, Jordan spins his little tail. And Cameron immediately starts questioning him. So Jordan's like, oh, well, I wanted to wait and I had to heal. And then he immediately goes, oh, why didn't you heal here? Like, why couldn't you have told us? You know, like obviously it's horrible. Like, why would you pretend that you're dead when you're alive? And not just alive, but you're like in the same town alive, right? Like, that's just like a extra nasty. And then the second that Cameron starts questioning him, that's when Jordan comes up to him and goes all, oh, my son, which is like, this is a thing that he does every time. And I checked it. I actually went all the way back. I went all the way back to episode 6 of season 1. And in episode 6 of season 1, Jordan's about to go meet up with the Crocs because the Crocs have killed Artemis's gym coach or a football coach. And he's waking up super early in the morning. And it's the day of Christine, either Christine's death or birthday.
It's her birthday. November 1st. Yeah. It's her birthday.
Yeah. So it's that day. And Cameron wakes up. He hears that his dad's up. He's like, where are you going? And he's just like, son. Which is like, okay, so that's his thing. Because he's just like deflecting. And he always deflects from like the bad things that he's doing. With like showering him with attention and affection of like what seems like super fatherly care, but it's like, it's just masking what he's doing.
He does it twice in the scene. First with the, why didn't you heal here?
Yeah.
And he does it later with when Cameron is like, you killed people. And he's like, yeah, well, I had a reason for it.
And that's when, you know me. Yeah, yeah.
And Cameron's like, I thought I did. And that's when he like goes up, grabs his face, like,
wipes away his like tears. Son. Like, my son.
He's oh,
like,
yeah, son. The wiping of the tears.
My son. Oh, it's so nasty bad. And then he's like, bring him in.
Absolutely
here.
Absolutely nasty man.
Brings him in for and a hug.
Cameron's face when he's hugging him. Like,
no, he's not okay.
So traumatized by everything that's going on. Like, this is not reassuring to him at all.
No, like, he's scared. Like, you can see that, like, he's just like, what?
I don't know if he's
happening?
Scared, but
not
he's
not scared
he's
in
very,
a way that's like, you're connected like, with the emotion. What? Yeah, but that is being, like, he is scared. He's not understanding that he's scared, but like it's just like a total unlocked range of emotions that he probably didn't even know that he had.
Yeah, but so we cut over to the ladies of the JSA and
the
Artemis
girlies.
Going to go look for the Crocs. That Beth found their last known location. Artemis does the super smooth slide down the ladder to get into the sewer. And I don't really have any notes about the scene other than I have chills watching it. Like, it's upsetting.
Yeah, I have notes.
Okay.
So, first of all, I've heard of commentary. People thought it was weird that they had all gone down into the tunnels in the first place without suiting up, except for Beth had her goggles. Like,
I guess.
But they know that the tunnels are dangerous is the thing, right? Like, so they were like, why are they, which is like, interesting. I don't know. My analysis of that is that from the very beginning, they're asking Artemis to like, wait up. So she's probably, the second that Beth had said, I think I have a lead, Artemis probably just ran for it. And the rest of the girls had to probably like run after her to like hold on and try to like get a hang of her before she like ran right. off into danger. I think that's what happens, I mean, because it happens like four times on the way to get to the room where like the murder
yeah there's
happened.
A couple times where they're like, we should suit up, and Artemis runs ahead. Yeah, so that makes sense.
And the other thing that I have to point out is the where's Rick, he won't return my calls, and then the well we can't wait for him, let's go from Courtney. Number one,
yeah,
okay, so Beth,
me being neglectful.
Yeah, so on one hand, even though we know that, like, at the end of the last episode, they've kind of established, oh, everyone needs to work together, we need everyone on the same team, and Beth clearly was like, yeah, I know that. It's nice to see that she actually is actively calling Rick and, like, leaving him voicemails, because, I mean, I feel that, like, after the exchange that they had, that like, I might not call Rick. Like, if I was her, I'd probably be mad, and maybe I'd be like, no, Yolanda, you call Rick or whatever. But she's not, mm-hmm. you know, so that like says a lot to me personally, that, you know, like she's still very well aware that he is not in a right state of mind and that he's in danger, and she's like, well, I need to contact him regardless of like maybe my own hurt feelings, because that's more important right now. But I'm just still so baffled at how much Courtney is brushing this aside. I don't have anything else to add to that. I'm baffled.
Yeah. I mean, I think that she probably does not necessarily think it's so bad. I don't think
she know.
She still doesn't know about the hourglass.
But it's like, why aren't at this
unless
point
Beth
of
told
time,
her off screen? But it's like,
but now I'm wondering, why isn't it being said? Is it because maybe Beth thinks it's like a patient confidentiality issue,
perhaps,
or she doesn't
like?
Or
it
she's
is
scared that
it is
Courtney's
kind of a
judge.
Problem. I don't know, but it is more of a problem in terms of. Like, Rick is kind of a threat right now.
Yes.
Like, we're, like not in terms of the story, but, like, he is somebody who is clearly not in his right mind.
Like, he's unstable.
Who has unlimited strength, who is going around. Like, he's very much, like, he could cause issues. He
yes.
could hurt somebody and not even think about, like, he wouldn't, it's not like he knows that he's hurting somebody, but he still would have to own up for those actions ultimately. So it's like, I think that it should transcend a patient confidentiality if she does genuinely have that sort of feeling about it, and she should probably let them know, like, Rick has unlimited access, he refuses to take it off, he clearly is addicted to it. If it was an addiction to like a drug, that would be one thing, we would go about it one way, but because he has the potential to hurt people, we should probably try and capture him. Like, which sounds crazy, but like you have to deal with that. You can't just leave
yeah.
him. You have to look at him like he's a threat.
It's like,
so
on one hand,
I
they're
do...
like, oh my gosh, there's a gorilla that might kill people, but it's like, oh, I'm not saying that Rick's going to mass murder people, but he's not going to be treating people by, like, gently petting their hair and being like, hello, no. Hi, how are you? Like, he's also basically like a gorilla on the loose. Like, that's kind of where they're at right now.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's a problem. Also, additionally, we don't find out until after this moment, but it's going to be even bigger of a problem that Icicle's on the loose while Rick is on the loose, knowing
yes.
that Icicle has vendetta against our man, and our man has vendetta
yes.
against Icicle's. Like,
yeah,
hello.
Well, especially because Jordan, so many times watching the cameras when we didn't
have
know
pointed
it was Jordan,
Rick out.
Was like specifically like pointing at Rick and angry at Rick. And,
yes.
Like, he was targeting Rick for sure. So
that's
like,
a problem.
Rick's gonna have a problem, which is why we thought that, like, maybe Jordan was going to kidnap Rick because he saw, like, his feud with his son or whatever, and would encourage Cameron to enact revenge on him that he didn't get to enact previously. And that didn't happen. And that's okay. I've accepted that that did not happen. But I really, really did think going into this episode that that was going to happen. Like, embarrassingly, I really thought, more than anything else.
With
I was so
left,
sure.
We were like,
30 seconds left, I was like, it's happening right
something.
Here.
Yeah.
It's the cliffhanger. It was not the cliffhanger.
That's all right.
We do get Pat, who's working on Stripe, and Mike, who was working on something. I can't tell what he was working on, but he had schematics for something. So I don't know if he was working on something else for Stripe or if he was working on something for his own Stripe. But it was interesting
to watch him work like that. Like, oh, Mike.
Yeah, it was like, I didn't know that Mike could do any engineering of any kind, but like, apparently he can. I mean,
it makes, so it's like, it's nice to see that somehow, even though it was off screen, we've some, I'm going to assume that Pat has taught him some skills, because how else is he doing this?
Yeah. It's weird that, like, in terms of legacy, that would be what the mantle that he would theoretically inherit, and we've seen more of him with Jakeem than we have him training to be the next Stripe pilot. Like, it doesn't
Pat is so
fully make sense,
so stubborn with refusing to let Mike actually become like the next Stripe. See,
well, we can't even psychoanalyze that, because like, clearly we have much more of a thing with Sylvester going on. I think that maybe if this was going on for another season, you would see, after the whole power struggle with Courtney and Sylvester, you might see Pat going, I think that I've been kind of hoarding. But it's not even a thing where Mike has been like, oh, my dad won't let me do this. Like, he's really not saying that much. The only thing that we get is early on in the season, he says something about, like, my dad has the keys to Stripe. He wants to supervise me when he has it. But it's like a one-time line that's, like, super forgettable.
However, we still have in Infinity Inc. Part 2 this whole segue now of, like, you know, Mike being like, oh, well, he's going to eventually hate and resent Pat for the way that he's treating him. And that's very not explicit in how they were explaining how he will get there. But the way that it's going, it seems to be with the whole leaving him out from Stripe and, you know, just letting him stay behind kind of thing. Because that's been what's been carrying along this entire time.
Yeah. But Pat gets the news. We don't really fully see his reaction.
But you see Mike is scared. Yeah, like, Mike is concerned.
Turn around and is like, what's wrong? We cut over to Barb. She also gets the news. She gets zero break, because as she walks in to her work, somebody is like, oh, did you hear? He's back. And then it's kind of funny, the sequence of events, because Jordan goes, hello, Barbara. And then everybody claps.
I know. No, that the American dream is scary. And here's the thing. I have to bring up at this particular moment, I am shocked and kind of dismayed that James Chappell's not here to see any of this. Because I was like, ooh, now we have a new player in the game who isn't going to be a blind sheep. And he, like, how is he going to react? Because we know Barbara knows. And obviously that's why she's acting scared the way she is. And I was like, ooh, now she has someone on her side and James is there with her. And that could be potentially dangerous. He was not there at all. And I was a little bit disappointed by that, but maybe he's working
with Beth.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. I think he is. I think he is actually working with Beth and helping to look for Rick. So,
which is actually character growth, because previously James Chappell would never not be at the American Dream.
So true.
Do you remember all the discussions that we had at this podcast?
Yes, you were like, on 4th of July, this man was at work. On Saturdays, this man was every single day. Eclipso even said he liked to stay at work so that he wouldn't have to go home and face his family. Yeah. Oh, who's speaking now, Eclipso? Toast, Eclipso. Who's grown now?
Eclipse toast.
Eclipse toast.
And then you get the next shot of Barb walking in to her office with Jordan, and it's all like, I don't remember if it's shaky, but it's definitely super blurry, and it's like, that's cinema. I love the moments of cinema that we do get in this show. They're always so fun with their camera work. But I have to say, it's a bold move for him. For Barb to walk up to him and call him pure evil. Like, you are in an enclosed office space with this man. And I think that you think that you have a little bit more amnesty. I don't know if amnesty is the right word, because I forget the definition of amnesty. But I'm going to go with amnesty because it feels right. In not getting shanked immediately. Because, like, he could just freeze you and leave you there. and then like move your body later at the end of the workday. Like if he locked your office, if he like sat outside your office and made sure that nobody came in, like nobody would know that you
Barbara
tied.
Said with so, like, her full don't, chest, like, you have a crush on me and you're bear. Not going to kill me right now. So I'm going to.
And I mean, she was apparently correct, but this is like a theme that happens throughout the episode because Courtney does it too, where she goes up to Icicle.
I was more concerned and for Courtney
without
for
the staff at all.
I know,
like,
she had
you're
no
an
way.
Evil man, and I hate you
in the middle
like,
of the night.
What? What are we doing?
It's,
here?
It's the Whitmore
he could
women.
Kill you.
They
you
have
are forgetting
so
that
much
he
audacity.
Could kill you.
I mean, this is what Paula meant when she said that. Courtney gets her fightingness. This is not a real word, but I'm putting from
yeah.
Barbara, because Barbara's like, all right, I am in a hot dress and I am going to tell Icicle in my business office that he gave me a year and
to
a half ago
yeah.
that he is evil and he has not changed, nor will he ever change. Also, by the way, I know who you killed last night. Like,
yeah.
It was my bestie. Like, okay.
Yeah. And the whole thing, he does bring up that the Ultra Humanite followed Sylvester, which is information that we didn't get before.
Yeah, so, but then later Sylvester says that the Ultra Humanite probably followed Jordan. So, like, we have...
Which clearly is not true because they're on the same side. So yeah. I think Jordan was telling the truth there, that presumably the Ultra Humanite was looking for Sylvester for whatever reason. Now, granted, I'm still half the mind, however the expression goes, that... Sylvester could be controlled by the Ultra Humanite. Like, it's very possible.
I still think
that's the case. And if he's not currently controlled, I think
then
that
he
by
will.
The finale, he might
yeah.
be controlled or he might be killed.
I mean,
and
why
the
have
Ultra Humanite put his brain in there.
Why have a telepathic ape if not for telepathic controlling? Like, what's
yeah,
I
don't know
fun.
Why you wouldn't.
You've got to have
I mean, that's
his
whole thing. That's, like, the whole thing, yeah. So I don't really know.
Also,
why?
Here is when he straight up lies to Barb, right? There's so many times in this episode that Jordan or Cameron say something so off about that Crocs murder because he's like, yes, that was regrettable, but... And then he says, but he hadn't set out to kill them, right? When we fully know that was a trap, right? He's telling, like, three different variations of the same lie today.
I agree. I feel like he's giving so many excuses for everything and he's really hounding down on that whole peace line. He wants to be a double agent so badly. Like, so badly. And it's like, stop it. You are embarrassing yourself.
That is embarrassing.
Not your
himself.
Job. That is your son's job. Shut up. We then get Courtney calling Sylvester. Sylvester is investigating the Ultra Humanite's lab and he doesn't see anything. And when he's on his way out, he gets a call from Courtney, who obviously has to be like, yeah, the Ultra Humanite, or sorry, Icicle is back. Do with that as you will. Good luck, Charlie. And Sylvester blows up the barn that had
remember
all the
when
evidence
we thought that
Humanites.
Was Rick's house
we did for a while ago
for a while
we thought it was potentially him blowing up Rick's house. Thank God it was not.
We were worried.
And then we cut over to Sylvester and Pat in the basement, and Sylvester is still yelling and throwing a fit. And I mean, like, I do get it.
This is the only time that I'm actually like not I am annoyed because we've seen him do this so many times. However, this is the one time that I actually am on his side, as in that it's not like a terrible, horrible, bratty kind of fit. Mm-hmm. Like, this is actually
well,
somewhat...
There are moments where I'm like, what? Like, first of all, he's like, you should have made sure
that
Icicle was dead.
Garbage.
Like, shut
oh,
up.
No,
his
know.
Son didn't know. His mother didn't know. Like,
no, I know.
There was
no
way
the way
for
it's
Pat
still,
to
but
have
that's
known that.
That's more about, that's more to do with the way that he disrespects Pat, which I've always had a problem with. But just in terms of the fact that he is throwing a temper tantrum this time, I'm like, maybe of all the times, this is the time that I would let you have
yeah.
that temper tantrum.
I mean, it's also probably a trauma response because, again, he was killed
yes.
by Icicle.
Yes.
Like, if you were, like, entertaining the idea of having to see your murderer again, like, I'm sure you would not be a happy camper about it. So I can't
for
be
sure.
fully mad. But then also, there's this whole bit where he says the plan is this, and then he talks about that he's going to get the staff. But when he says that, the music gets super scary and like very much like it's like a villainous sound cue. Ooh. That I don't think we've heard before.
Okay, that's with interesting Sylvester. Because at the end, yeah, remember no. at the end of this episode, we get Jordan with the Ultra Humanite,
yeah.
He says, "Oh, it's time, like it's now time, whatever." Well, mm-hmm, if it's time mm-hmm. for a plan, and then here's the first time we're mentioning a plan.
I don't think they say plan at the end, though.
No, I know they don't say plan, but he's like, it's time, but he doesn't say time for what? Like, time for a plan to start? If that's the case, then, like, I don't know. But also, we do know that maybe that's going to be the music for when Sylvester, like, turns on Courtney and says, nah, I'm not giving you the staff, and that's going to be the whole thing.
Sylvester is very much an anti-villain throughout this entire season. I feel like that's pretty clear. So, it makes sense that they would be using more villainous music for him, because he's going to be getting in the way of our heroes and fulfilling their goals.
See, so. Cameron has had more villainous music play behind him than Sylvester so far. Not you! Not you! The way that you fully was like...
No. Sometimes I don't know where you're going with things, and when you change the subject really quickly, my brain is like... Cameron, no, you don't apologize.
This is Canadian. That's a Canadian thing. I was just... Cameron McKent has more villainous music that plays behind his scenes when he's doing random stuff, like just staring at a wall, than Sylvester while he's actively being a horrible person to his best friend.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised it's taking this long to actually get, like, some
ominous
music.
That it played before and we just didn't notice, but I feel like it probably didn't, because we watched these episodes between us quite a few times.
Quite a lot. Yeah, and I haven't really picked anything up. Maybe I just didn't think that whatever music it was particularly, like, interesting, or not that it wasn't good, but just that, you know, how we pick up particular instruments for certain characters, like Rick in the little
piano
keys, and then the piccolos for Icicle, and it's just, there's, like, those telltale, and I think it's trumpets, I think, for the Dr. Midnight song, if I'm correct.
Then we cut over to the uncomfy porch scene. Oh. And, okay, there seem to be some people who looked at this scene and were like, this is an appropriate way for a healthy couple, to interact with each other. And very politely, if that was your interpretation of the scene, you are wrong. And I'm sorry for calling you wrong, because a lot of things are up for interpretation and are not
subjective.
Subjective, yes. Thank you. But the way that Cameron was acting to Courtney in this scene, who was very, very obviously uncomfortable, like, that should not be something that is romanticized. And I don't think the show... Oops, my notebook fell. And I don't think that the show was trying to romanticize it based off of the music and everything that was going on. Like, they did eventually play Kameny music towards the end, but it had, like, a very tragic and dour note.
Yes.
Like, it didn't end off in that same, like, positive Christmassy spin that it normally has. And, like... if you listen to the soundtrack before that music cue starts, they're pumping that, like, horror note. Like, you know, if you're watching a horror movie and you're getting to a scene where, like, presumably there's going to be a jump scare. Or like,
someone's
there's
going,
like,
to open the door or something like that.
Yeah, like, there's coming out suspense. Suspense? What? Suspense. they're pumping that note. And you can't, it's not super obvious. You can't really hear it that well if you're listening at it at, like, a normal person volume. But if you crank that up, you can totally hear that note playing in the background. So, like, clearly they wanted you subconsciously on some level to be unnerved and not even necessarily realize that you are being unnerved and tricked by the soundtrack into being unnerved. But everything about it is... just like Cameron shows up on Courtney's doorstep, right, and is like, we can forget everything. It's fine that my dad murdered somebody.
But before we even get there, Courtney's initial response is, what are you doing here? Like, right. She doesn't want to see him. She doesn't want him there. And she's not like, oh, you're here. She's like, what are you doing here?
I don't think that she necessarily doesn't want him there. I think it's more so she's confused as to how he turned around this quickly. But she's also upset. Because she did want him. At the beginning of the episode, she theoretically wanted to see him again.
Yes.
But she didn't want to see him again this quickly. And she didn't want to see him again caught off guard.
Right.
From it.
And with him.
Especially after knowing that his father is back in town and has been killing people again that she's friends with. Like, she's not happy about that.
Yeah.
So, but
she always she had always wanted her relationship with Cameron to have been on her terms.
Yes.
And not on his terms.
And for the most part, it was.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting because this is like one of the first things, I guess, that like proactively where he is seeking her out.
Yeah.
I feel like for the most part, you see Courtney going to him. The one time that we know canonically that he went to Courtney, it was like off screen and Barbara didn't let him in the house to give her flowers. So like, this is the first time that he's pursuing her. And, you know, I think that probably,
and you know what's funny about that? Because in season one, Cameron was going, oh, I like this girl, but I don't really know if I want to ask her out, but like, maybe I should, but I'm not really, I'm kind of shy. Like, that's not really my thing. And Jordan said, if you have feelings for this girl, you gotta go and ask her out. It's so easy. Just go ahead and do it. Like, you were put on this earth to find love. Like, don't let anyone stop you. Go do it. And then Cameron was like, thanks, Dad, and walked up at the homecoming game and told Courtney, hey, do you want to go to the dance with me? Like, he got that courage directly from his dad, right? So it's also interesting to see that, like, it's the concept of Cameron going off and deciding to go and approach Courtney actually always does have his dad looming in the background as kind of orchestrating that in the first place.
Yeah. But so then you get the whole thing where Courtney's like, the Crocs are dead. Your father killed them. And Cameron's like, I know. And that's awful. But.
And he couldn't even like get over, like he could barely trip. He was tripping over the word. Like, yeah.
He speeds through it. He's like, it's awful. But, like, come on. It was self-defense.
I don't know, but this is the part when I really, really, really wanted to say. I wanted to act out the...
Okay. All right. Tam gets her quota. I say quota as if I don't also sometimes take the wheel and... Go ahead.
The way that Cameron says it was they were probably jumping to conclusions. It's the way
he did not say it like that.
The conclusions is the conclusions part that kills me.
I think
me.
It was more like jumping to conclusions. I think
No, because they were jumping to conclusions. But it's just the way that his voice.
I disagree.
Conclusions. It kills me. It's just because it doesn't have the whole speech. Like, I only have that one line, so that's why it sounds funny. He just sounded so delusional at that point with the jumping, because he's like, oh, they were totally jumping to conclusions, and he never said that. Like, Jordan never said that. This is now Cameron's interpretation of what
he's Jordan is jumping to conclusions.
Yes, he's jumping to conclusions. And I love the absolute bafflement and shock and bewilderment on Courtney's face when she's being
the
told
blink,
this
blink of it all. Yeah, no, she's like, what? Like, she's totally unprepared for her boyfriend to be, or ex-boyfriend, to be just, like, casually justifying murder. Like, completely caught off guard. And, I mean, who wouldn't be? But, like, I don't know. It's something. And then when Courtney is trying to emphasize that killing somebody is completely different, like, I can't forgive your father for doing that, then Cameron is like, well, you forgave the Crocs and Cindy, like, what about them? And like, it's jarring that he's like bringing them up and pushing them into the conversation. I guess it's not necessarily something that wouldn't come up, but it's like, when did you hear about this? What
That's what
do you
I
know
wanna
about
know.
These people?
I know. Like, what is
like,
it that
what
you're
did Jordan tell? Because he knew nothing
no,
about anything.
That's what's all, it's so, like, and he says it with such confidence. Like, what do you mean about Cindy? Cindy was just a mean girl at school.
Right.
As far as you knew, like,
you didn't know that she had a little knifey. You didn't know that she was going to try to stab you over the summer. Like,
what did she
do
that you think is on the same level as your dad murdering people? Like, what?
Right. Like, I don't...
No, it's baffling. Like, it's shocking. Like, it's the way that he carries the conversation. Like, as if, like, obviously he's in the right. Like, how could Courtney not be following his perspective? Like, it's the way that Jordan, the way that he is spinning this conversation, and I'm not saying he's doing this purposely, because he's not doing it purposely, but it's just so similar to the way that Jordan would speak to other people in mm-hmm. the ISA in season one, when he's all like when he would speak to the gambler, when he would speak to William, you know, like trying to say, well, listen, this is, I know it's maybe not like the way you would like to do it, but this is the way that it's got to happen, because this is the way that it's got to happen, right? And the other ones, everyone else right. is like, I don't really like that, but I'm not going to say no to you, because I'm not going to say no to Jordan McKent, right? And this is kind of like starting to have Cameron kind of take on that very much comfortable stance in
that characteristic
opinion. Yeah, the characteristic. I don't even know what made up words I just said there, but yeah,
the part that gets me, like, even before we get into the big thing, the part that gets me is when Courtney is like, did your father send you here? Because she's obviously genuinely like, this has to be fake. Like,
she
like,
knows that
she's confused, but she's also like, I feel like there, to an extent of it, she's like, this cannot be the boy that I have been having an imaginary future with in my head. He would never say these things. So she's like, it has to be his dad that sent him here that's like saying these things. And of course she would be hurt by that. But like, that reality is almost
better. Yeah,
than
better.
The reality of
He came to these conclusions
himself. Here to justify murder.
Yeah.
And be like, but it's fine. I love you so much. We're gonna
and
kiss, kiss.
My grandma's okay with it. The grandma who my has just told me okay to kill your best friend, Rick. She's fine
right.
with it now.
She's fine with it. But like, oh, also okay. the no, Courtney, no.
I know. The way that he says that is
the
like,
delivery of that is just so, oh my gosh.
Almost
like,
creepy. Like, it's chilling. It's chilling. It's,
yeah. No, because it's like, I can't tell if you're being earnest right now.
I don't
this
know what you're
thinking. It's so hard to read, because I genuinely don't know. Because it's also
what if
like
we got
not
a flashback
completely
and Jordan
in line?
Really did tell him to go visit Courtney. Like,
I mean, like, it's possible, it's but still, like, it's just like everything that he does in this scene feels like so detached from the opening scenes, when he's clearly like so traumatized and is like, I don't know,
like,
I don't know how I can
like,
possibly able
hours.
To believe you. Like, there was something that happened over
yes.
the course of the day where he was like, yeah, no, my father is right and everything is fine. And everything's going to be great. And maybe that is him just, like, justifying. Like, I think he's probably, there's a combination of him being
unless
like, I don't want to.
Unless the ultra-humanite
completely,
has Cameron, and this is actually
I don't think so.
Cameron. I'm kidding.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
But,
that would be so disappointing.
But I think that, like, it's probably a combination of he doesn't want to fully discredit his father. I think he's been conditioned to
yes.
at the end of the day love his father above all, so the fact that his father is back in his life, he's not really going to question beyond the initial shock.
Also,
and, I mean, you saw the display.
Yes, but just talking about the physical affection thing, he's not received physical affection from his grandparents like
no.
this entire season.
No,
at all.
You're right.
But he does get it from Jordan, and so
he probably
that's
yeah, he probably
like a
was missing
starved
that.
Child
so.
Who lost their mother. Tragically lost right. his father tragically. His father comes back and immediately is like, you know, like as we mentioned, like wiping away the tears, giving him a hug. He hasn't felt that mm-hmm. in a long time,
right? So it's probably like a mixture of that, and then also he got over Courtney gaslighting him
so fast.
So I think he really genuinely does like have feelings for her and didn't necessarily like I still don't fully understand how you get over that. Like, she fully said that she killed your dad. And like, I know that he's alive now. But like,
you're not a little bit mad like, about that?
I don't understand how he's not like, wish he didn't lie to me. Wish that, like, about any, like, I don't know why you kept the secret from me for so long. Like, yeah. I don't know. But again, it's so hard to read him. I cannot figure out his motivations in this scene at all. I can only tell why he does the actions that he does. Yeah. And maybe why he's able to justify it. But it's like, I don't know what your ultimate motivations are. I don't know a single reason that boy has for anything other than that one time he popped Rick's tire. And I guess like the Ice Hour fight in 309. So anything Ice Hour related, totally understand those motivations. Anything outside of that, what is happening? What are you doing? What is your purpose here? Please show me something.
Yeah, no, but I was going to say that what strikes me is how even in this moment, like, as he's like, no, I came here on my own and this is my old thing, and we're like, okay, this seems to be like Cameron's ideology kind of coming forward, that he's like, yeah, it's fine that you're not lying to me. I feel like if the most normal thing he could have said, like what would have saved Cameron in this moment, is if he said, let's just like put us on hold and like let's try to get through this, because I know it's weird. Like, I'm coming to tell you that I know that my dad's here, and I know that you would probably freak out about that, and that's weird. Let's just like put us on like the shelf for a moment while we figure this out together. Like, can we have like a truce, and then maybe we can revisit like the relationship later. That would have been the most appropriate response.
I mean, that would have been appropriate
for Cameron,
but it wouldn't.
For Cameron,
I don't think it would be
at
as
this point.
Fun.
No, it's not as. Oh, of course not. I'm not talking about fun. I'm talking about something that's salvageable for Cammy.
Sure.
Okay? But what he's about to do is the opposite.
I don't know why I laughed like that. That was like, upsetting to me.
Here is when it truly gets more than uncomfortable.
Yes.
We have Cameron reacting to Courtney questioning him, and we have this like very long second of his eyes traveling to Courtney's hands, up to her face, then back to her hands, up to her face again to make sure that she hasn't changed her mind and actually is agreeing with him, and then back down to her hands, and then he grabs them, and it's such a choppy move on his part. It's not smooth at all. Like, not at all. Nothing like the, like, you, it's magical, like
I
you
still don't
kind
think
of thing.
Smooth. I still
which,
think that,
which
oof, but
it's, I cringed at that too. But that was at least, like, it didn't take him 30 seconds either, but, like, it didn't take him, like, we didn't have to watch the brain cells come form together.
The neurons
to
firing,
make
yeah.
that decision. He just, it just no. came out of his mouth. Here,
he
it's like we
it,
saw
if you will.
Every single thought that flashed through his mind, even though we don't know what they were. We saw the thoughts right. going when he's like, ooh, time to grab her hands. And then he said, oh, we can start over, all this kind of stuff. And then she didn't say anything. She did not say anything. And he's like, this is a good time to kiss her. And I was, did you expect a kiss to happen in that
No.
scene? I didn't know.
I was
shocked.
I think I said stuff out loud. Like, there was nobody in the room with me. So there's no way that I,
my
anybody
My mom was there with
anything.
Me.
But I think I was like, what? Like,
my
I think
mom
I said what
turned
out loud.
To look at me like, what are we watching? Like,
right,
he did not actually
like,
do that, did
what?
He? And I'm like, yeah, he did. But no, it was.
It's very much, I mean, clearly this is behavior that he's learned from Jordan. I don't know if he, I wouldn't go as far as to say that he was like consciously being.
No,
like,
I don't think
I'm
so.
I'm going to do this to manipulate my ex.
Right. No, he wasn't.
But like, it's very much the same thing that Jordan does to him all the time, albeit not with a kiss, but like with the grabbing of the face and the wiping away of the tears and the my son and the claiming and all these things. That's what he's doing with Courtney. He's holding onto her hands and he's leaning in for a kiss and he's making his voice softer and trying to be more reassuring in order to get her to see the way that he sees.
It's called complicit touch.
And she's literally speechless about it.
She is speechless.
And she's
Courtney Whitmore.
This clearly hasn't happened to her before.
She usually has something to say.
Like she's not like, yeah, this makes sense. Like she's like, I don't know what just happened. And that is not romantic. I'm sorry. If you think that that's romantic, it's very much not. It's a manipulative tactic. It does not matter if he intended for it to be manipulative or not. That's kind of what happened.
And Courtney did not go back home after that. She went for a walk, right? Like,
no, she literally was
she
like,
needed
to
do something. She needed to collect her thoughts. She was unsettled. Like, she was unsettled. If you know, like, if she went back into the house and she's like, oh, carried on with the rest of her day, let's go talk to Yolanda now. She didn't do that. Like,
no.
She had to leave. She needed to, like, walk out whatever that had happened, which is like, okay, yeah. Yeah, heavy. And it's just like, it's interesting because I would love to hear what Barbara might have said if she heard that had happened. Because Barbara's the one who intercepted in the first place, like in episode 6, and was like, oh, I don't actually want Cameron to like visit Courtney. Like, what, and all of that stuff. Like, that happened. And Barbara knows how Jordan is with her, right? Like, she has been a victim to, you know, Jordan's advances. So
I feel like this is something that Courtney probably would not share.
No, I don't think she would either. But I'm just saying, I would love to see how Barbara reacted, because that's like a moment, like that's a parenting moment. That's like, whoa, I can't believe I'm having this conversation with you right now, but we're going to maybe have to have this conversation. But Courtney isn't the kind of person, you know, most teens probably wouldn't tell their parents, oh, by the way, I had a kiss and it made me feel very uncomfortable. Like, what do I do? Like, no. But I'm just saying out loud, whoa, like, they could technically bond over that. Like, which would be interesting to watch. It's not probably going to happen, but...
No. But we do cut over to Mike and Jakeem, and they're trying to figure out a wish that would solve all their problems magically. The one that they come up with is to take away Icicle's powers, which does not work because the Thunderbolt says that by taking away his powers, it would kill him. They're the only thing that are holding him together. However, the way that Jakeem phrases it is that he can't have, he's saying for him to be a normal person without powers of any kind, which makes me feel like if there is something else that's going on that's not just the ice stuff, like if it is like some kind of ultra humanite thing, I don't know, like if it's, I don't even know how it would be possible, but if like the ultra humanite is controlling him and he's like literally is willing the molecules to be together, like using his brain power or something like that, like would that cancel that out? I don't know. That makes it sound kind of stupid, but like my point being, the phrasing without powers of any kind makes me feel like, is there something else that's going on that we don't necessarily know about at this stage?
I also don't understand how that doesn't work either, considering the fact that they had reduced him to ice cubes before, so that didn't kill him. So why couldn't they, I mean, I understand that removing the powers is what's going to cause the problem,
then
why couldn't they have, like, they could have rephrased it in a way to be like, can we have Icicle in a container that we put in the freezer and then just never take it out of the freezer or something like that? Like, that's not killing him, because as he says, he's apparently now conscious in the ice form. He just can't really move without the space to move to kickstart the water cycle. But I feel like they could have debated a little bit more. And interestingly enough, you know, now when the Thunderbolt's all like, can't do that. It goes against my rules. We now have Mike, you know, butting in with the utilitarianism debate about how, like, well, actually, if you're going to say you can't kill this one person, you're very likely going to kill a whole bunch of more people. And very appreciative of the fact he says, including me. Like, he says, like, mm-hmm. this is the undercurrent of everything that's going on now for the next probably two episodes for Mike. He knows he is victim number one. He is victim number one. He's the one that killed this man, and he's back.
I think my favorite thing that is brought to light is what Jakeem is like, what did you do to him?
Yeah, I love Jakeem.
Like, yes. And Mike is like, yeah, no, I smashed him into ice cubes with a truck. Like,
turn him to a slushy. That's what I did. I saved everyone.
They turn somebody into ice cubes in season one. They turn somebody into toast in season two.
Right.
What is somebody going to be turned into at the end of season three?
Into a snow globe. They put him into a snow globe. He's just a figure in a snow globe.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. But what about the ultra humanite? Would he also go into the snow globe?
I guess.
I feel like trapping Jordan in a snow globe that he can't ever get out of. That has unlimited food. Like, that seems like a easy way.
Yeah.
Just put him in a prison that he can't get out of and give him food. I mean, that's probably inhumane. Don't do that. But, like, I don't know. You could probably think of something.
Send him to another planet where there's a whole bunch of ice people and they all think the same way as he does. Goodbye. So he can just have his little icicle community.
Make him have a gigantic fear of flying so he can't get on an airplane, and make him afraid of water because he's traumatized of the water, and teleport him to Norway.
Send him to his Norse gods to let them judge him.
But teleport him somewhere to a different continent. I feel like they're just not creative enough. I feel like give me the Thunderbolt and I would come up with 7 million ways. I'm built different.
Also, but Mike is still pressuring Jakeem to be the one coming up with all of this. Like, he's like, it's still, you know, it's still, you know what it reminds me of? It still reminds me of, remember how I, oh man, next episode, we're at our episode before the finale where Rick is pressured to do crazy, silly, like, science, right? And it's like, I was like, why does the scene where Mike's telling Jakeem that he has to come up with a wish remind me of something similar? And it is Pat always giving, like, Rick these unreasonable time limits to come up with some crazy science explanations. And, like, that's what Mike is doing now with Jakeem. But, no, but I know that we know that at some point Jakeem's really going to get a successful wish. Like, it's going to happen because we've seen, like, the behind, we've seen a, what's the word?
It was, like, a demo reel. Special effects people.
Yeah.
And they showed him.
So that's coming next episode. I hope that there's enough for just a little bit of closure to rebalance out the relationship between Jakeem mm-hmm. and Mike.
But then Cindy comes in, and I think it's funny that she's going into her ex-best friend's house.
Yeah.
And, like, not interacting with her ex-best friend whatsoever. But okay. And B, the door is unlocked, which is like a forever callback this season.
Yes.
But it is very funny that, like, you're not going to lock your door. There's a killer gorilla on the loose who probably won't use doors, but there's also a killer icicle man on the loose. You're not mildly concerned.
Yeah.
And then there's more Thundershiv weirdness. It's like, what?
Also, I liked the way that Cindy had said, well, with everything that's going on, it's a lot for someone to handle it by themselves, so I'm going to help you. But really, it's like, that's clearly, she's the one that decided, ooh, this is a lot more than I can handle with myself, so I'm the one who needs help. But she's spinning it to make it sound like she's the one that's, you know, taking time to join their team. But, you know, like, she can't do it by herself either, so it was very Cindy of her to phrase it like that.
So Courtney goes on her little walk and she sees Jordan, and Jordan immediately starts talking to her in this not really necessarily threatening, but it doesn't make you feel great way. And at one point, Jordan is like, yeah, I know that you're with Cameron, or like you were dating. And she's like, of course you do. You've been spying on us. Like, she's so done with him and everything about what's been happening in the past, like, 24 hours.
She should have told Cameron. She should have. I know she didn't have the chance, but she should have told Cameron, did you know your dad has been spying? He put cameras in my house to spy on me? Like,
I mean, she should have, but she probably was way too shocked.
I understand.
The justification for murder.
But she should have. Like, she still should. Yeah.
Really, the biggest takeaway that I have from this conversation, aside from Jordan continuing to lie and really try to press? Just try to hammer down the point that he's a changed man or whatever, is he uses Courtney and Cameron's relationship
as
leverage.
Oof. That's like nail in the coffin.
Which, well, it's, I
for
would
me,
say
for
that.
Me.
I think that that's not necessarily,
I
don't
for
think
me,
that Cameron
it
would
makes,
condone that.
Okay.
But I do think that is really showing how he's not a changed man, and that he's in fact a very slimy man, a sleaze bag.
yeah but I just, for me, like, I just, it's so icky from Courtney's perspective after just going
100%.
On and asking Cameron, did your father send you? He's like, no. And then Jordan said, because Cameron said we can start over, and then Jordan says you can start again. It's almost the exact same language. And even if it had nothing to do, like, even if it was coincidental that they, like, mm-hmm. you know, that they both had these conversations, at the end of the day, it's a grown man telling a teenage girl what romantic life she ought to have, when this teenage girl knows that this man is a serial killer and a liar to, like, the masses. Like, the whole, like, it's just, it's, like, I feel like anything, Courtney already knows everything that comes out of his mouth. Like, she almost shouldn't believe, right? So it's like, to then put something that's dear to her, which was, like, her first relationship, and for it to come out of his mouth as, like, his own suggestion, must be so dirty. Like, it's wrong.
So then we cut over to Artemis, who's in her room. I don't know how she ended up back alone at her house. But she's there, and she's, like, lifting a kettlebell, and I mean, it's really just a means to get out, let out her pent-up frustration towards, obviously, the whole situation of her parents dying, of course. But then, of course, we have that auxiliary interview with Stella Smith, where she was saying that she didn't necessarily want the life that she had for herself, and she didn't necessarily want to be, like, the best athlete in Blue Valley, and she perhaps would have pursued other things, but she was doing it to please her parents, which is a very interesting thing that I didn't actually ever really think of for Artemis specifically. She always pegged me as the type who did want to be doing whatever she was doing, so it's really interesting to see that she's not.
I did see that, because I just saw just how severely on how intense the clocks were. You know how it is when, like, you play, like, an instrument, for example, then you get to a certain age and you're like, you know, this isn't really fun anymore, because I'm trying to be, like, hammered into becoming, like, the best player in the family, or, like, the best, like, you know, like, the best person on the team or whatever. And with the way that you see it all the way from season one, Crusher is telling everyone that he knows, my daughter's going to be the first woman in, like, football American history kind of thing, like college football, right? He's been saying that since season one. And it's like, if you hear it enough times, it's kind of like the whole, actually, kind of like the whole Lorelai and Rory, oh, you're going to go to Harvard kind of thing from, like, Gilmore Girls, right? Where it's like, it just becomes your life. But you don't really take the time to stop and think about anything else. And this was the moment where Artemis is like, but this was my entire life. And if my parents aren't here to see me do this, then why am I, like, what was the point, you know? And because she probably never got the chance to actually stop and think, well, what do I want for me?
Yeah. Side note, this is a very far side note, but I think it's kind of boring that Henry didn't get and Cindy didn't get an assigned hobby. Like, classic archetypical hobby. Like, you have jock covered, you have music covered, you have artist covered. There should have been a theater kid. guess Joey was kind of a theater kid.
Joey was kind of a theater kid.
Joey was Henry was jock, but he wasn't good because Artemis was better than him.
So like it one of like
there should have been like a designated smart kid that was like a mathlete, and then there should have been Cook. Like Mean Girl is an archetype, so I'll give Cindy that. But then Henry didn't
like
get
a debate like club kind of person or
yeah. Henry didn't get anything specific. He was just like mean jock, but Artemis is a jock and Cindy's mean, so it's like they kind of combined too, and they had the opportunity to not do that. I don't know. Anyway, thank God that Barb comes in, and
she should have come in sooner. But all
right. Right. She could have come in sooner. But the implication that this entire time the Crocs have been leaving their house unlocked too.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like there's symbolism there. And I don't think it was meant to be symbolism there, but I'm going to pretend that there's symbolism there. And that the Crocs would have invited the Whitmore Dugans into their home at any time of day. Like...
That's actually sweet. Like, they were breaking in, but they weren't breaking in because their houses were also open. They just never bothered to go and see.
Right, they didn't view it as something that they needed to do. But Barb comes in and doesn't break into her house, but definitely pulls a Croc move and comforts her and is like, come home with us. You can't be alone right now. And the Whitmore Dugans are collecting wayward children. So
yes,
I guess
but very selective in how they do that. But I don't like, want them to get Rick.
They don't have enough space.
So what I found, I just have to point out, like, as I said, I was watching it with my mom. And when Barbara said, you can come with us because you shouldn't be alone, my mom said, but what about the other girl that's living with them? Because
the other girl?
That's just literally what she said. She said that about Yolanda. And then 3 seconds later, you see Yolanda. And I turned to her and went, they had literally your same, like, thought process of like, oh, now we have to show where the other girl is.
Well, I don't think that she's going home.
No, I don't think she's going home either. But my mom was like, but what about the, which is so funny that then they showed Yolanda like literally next. But before we get to Yolanda, I am not mad at what's happening with Barbara with Artemis because I'm glad that they're bringing Artemis in. But I cannot help but be vexed that they're doing this. But they do not care about Rick. I just thank you for hearing my one sentence rant.
I agree.
I don't understand it because
I don't know.
It's been like this for over a year. You're going to let a grown man live. You're going to refurnish your entire basement to let a grown man live and sleep in a bed in the basement, but not the child who was a friend of yours, Pat. Like, actually, like, the father was a friend of you. I just don't get it.
I don't know.
I don't get it. But moving on.
So we do get that scene with Yolanda. And I have to say, I'm not in love
no,
with
No, I didn't
ending.
Like it. No.
It makes sense. Like, I totally understand how they got there. Where I think it's natural that if you see somebody who is mourning the loss of her parents, that you would want to get in contact with your parents again. Like, I think that that's a natural thing to happen. But if the implication is that we're just going to sweep everything under the rug and Yolanda is just going to go back to living in that house when her mother has shown no signs of
change,
improving.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you can't do that. So I'm hoping that that's not the case, but I also don't know exactly what they're going to do with 3 house guests under their roof. Like, they simply don't have the space.
Well,
so,
Sylvester's going
and
to
Artemis
leave.
Has nowhere else. Well, Sylvester's probably going to die. That's true. But Artemis, but I mean, even still, the implication is that Yolanda has been like, I think they have a guest bedroom, but I also am not 100% sure. But I've been under the impression that Yolanda has been sleeping with Courtney. They've been having, like, sleepovers in her room every single night. So,
because she's always in her room. Yeah. I have to point out that it's Yolanda's mother that really needs to be making the first move.
Yes.
If this
yes.
is going to be something that is anywhere near acceptable. The word choice of Yolanda telling her mother, oh, well, I was lying to protect you, sounds like the start of a narrative of Yolanda having to basically be the one to apologize again for stuff
yeah.
that she doesn't need to be apologizing for. Yeah. For things that she's being accused of that she didn't even do and that her parents don't have the full story of. And it just, you know, it leaves a bad taste in your mouth to see how emotional Yolanda is to even just go through this when, like, it shouldn't be on her shoulders to fix no. this. Like, she's thinking, like, I have to fix this. And it's like, it doesn't, she doesn't have to be the one to fix this. Like, she shouldn't be. It's just, it's so convoluted at this point. So it's disappointing. But, you know, I don't want to say that she should never speak to her mother again, she should never be with her family again or anything like that. Like, I don't think that's the solution necessarily either. Don't think she should be living in her house. But it's a tricky situation. But the show wrote Yolanda in a corner. Like, they yeah. put her here. So, you know, yeah. I'm not going to be surprised if I'm not going to be impressed with the way that they end it. Because I'm like, they should have wrapped this up. Like, they should have moved on from this. Like, a full season and a half ago.
Yeah. It's kind of sad that Yolanda's storyline this entire time has been basically her family is...
shaming her. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's a bummer.
Like, I mean, she deserved other things. She really did deserve more. I'm sure
there are families that are like this, but, like, come on. Like, give her one other storyline. Like, you at least used to have the murder guilt, but, like, I don't know. It's, that was also a bummer. There was a cow it's just bummer. Yolanda only gets yeah. certified bummers.
Yeah. No, it's just, it's because, you know, even with the guilt over the murder, it's like, that also was, like, it was brainwave. Like, you know, like, it's like all right, of these, like, you're giving Yolanda the worst circumstances and you're making her feel horrendous about stuff that, like, if any other character was in her position, they would have folded. And, like, she is clearly equally so horrified by the life that she's currently living. And it's like, just right. don't let her suffer anymore. Just, like, give her breathing room. It sucks. I was also disappointed that they, in the song montage of emotional moments, they went through all of the girls, Artemis, Yolanda, and then Courtney, but they totally skipped over Beth. I was I know I did, but I just want to say what I had wished was here was her showing, like, the voice, like, just her leaving a voicemail and, like, seeing that it wasn't going anywhere. I feel like that would have fit so perfectly in that. And then I would have been like, okay, I see the vision. But the fact that she's gone, I was like, why didn't you include her? That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Especially because we had such a long flashback at the beginning. Like, you totally could have squeezed her in. But then we get this transition shot from Yolanda in the bedroom down to Sylvester. And this is the funniest sequence of events in the episode. Because Sylvester is staring dead out into the yard from the porch. And we know this because he's directly under Courtney's window. And we know that Courtney's window is in the front of the house. And Pat comes out and is like, Courtney will be here any minute. And then Sylvester says something about her, and then Courtney's like, what am I gonna do? So the implication is that they say this and Courtney is like 6 feet out in front of them in the yard, like literally walking up the path to the house, and Pat is like, Courtney's gonna be here any minute, like, she's in your sight line, just use your eyes. And the, like, how did you have this conversation? Like, are you... I don't know. The blocking here was very funny to me.
My justification was that it takes all of Sylvester's brain cells to monologue.
And Pat? Pat is the just... one who says she's going to be here any minute now. She's right there. You can see her. I promise. She's going to show up in 10 seconds.
Pat,
like,
Pat probably got mad. Pat got mad when Sylvester said that, oh, she has to do this. And he's like, oh, well, Courtney doesn't have to do anything. Which also, I like that Pat says that for Courtney, because Courtney in this episode kind of lacked some agency, not mm-hmm. on purpose, but she felt right. like she had lost agency. And it was like, mm-hmm. love that Pat is being like, no, give Courtney that agency. That's, you know, her right. But
yeah,
I was like, oh, maybe he saw her coming and it was so mad at Sylvester that he was like, I'm just gonna let him walk into this.
So, and they have their little conversation about how Sylvester wants to use the staff to get Icicle. And I think Courtney's takeaway is like, let me think about it.
Yeah,
I
don't think she don't actually, they don't, they cut away before we actually get her reaction. Okay. But also, what's interesting about this scene is that we have Courtney say, well, what if Icicle is right that they want to work together? Which is like,
Perhaps the manipulation did in fact
work. Yeah, but that's disappointing. Like, perhaps. After all that, perhaps that kiss and perhaps the Jordan scene did. Like, I'm telling you, the mechanic.
They're convincing. They're charismatic, apparently. Even though it makes me go, oof. Apparently, it works wonders on the ladies in real life. Or not in real life, in fake life.
That's terrible, but it's apparently true.
And then we cut over to Cameron, who he's looking for his dad, but it's just like a scene
that scene
like,
is so
indicates that he's like
not there
in the dark still to some capacity, and it's still weird. Like, I still don't fully understand his motivations, but at least we know that he is not aware, presumably, of his father's alliance with the Ultra Humanite. Did he mention the Ultra Humanite?
No, he doesn't know that. He doesn't know about the Ultra Humanite even existing. He doesn't know about that. Nope.
So
nope. He's going. That's what I'm saying. That there's going to be a gorilla discussion, and it's going to be so funny.
The gorilla discussion. What exactly else is there in this world? And then we get like the final reveal where Icicle is working with the Ultra Humanite and does not, in fact, have Rick Tyler kidnapped in the woods, and like, yeah, makes sense. I don't really have anything to say on that. Villain's gonna villain. He's like, now that Brainwave's dead, he has to fill the slot as the most evil man on the show.
Yeah.
So I guess, like, why not?
I miss Brainwave.
I don't really understand why, because, like, Sylvester establishes that they don't like each other. The ISA never liked the Ultra Humanite and vice versa. So, like,
why
I don't
now?
Know how that alliance fell into place. So if it is the sort of thing where, as revenge,
also,
Ultra Humanite is taking control.
How does Jordan, as a malformed ice pop, get approached by Ultra Humanite? Like, how does that happen?
I don't know.
Like, was he just going through a walk in the woods and then, like, Ultra Humanite, like, or did Ultra Humanite, like, attack him and then he maybe shattered himself to like free.
Well, what was the timeline? Do you think that maybe
I don't know how
they
sooner.
Like he set up the camera? I still don't understand how he possibly set up all those cameras in water form.
I know,
but like
it's so
like
he also
set
we
up
have
all
to
the cameras
that.
And then
we had to discuss that Jordan has been in everyone's houses because he put up the cameras. Like, hello. Hello?
Do you think he can turn into water form like the kid from Sky High and is going through the sewers like through their toilets?
And he goes through their toilets or like in their tap where like Barbara's like turning on the tap and then like Jordan sneaks out.
He's like sneaks out.
Look. Ah, time to install some cameras in here. Also, because we know that in the remember the episode in was it episode 7 or is it episode 7 I think? Where Jakeem wishes for a whole bunch of for something that
oh well because all the killer was the Ultra Humanite, so they're all the cameras that the Ultra Humanite they were all like movie cameras, so presumably that Dolores Winters touched or like the Ultra Humanite as Dolores Winters.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's about all that we have to say about this episode.
Yeah, we're done.
Just
how excited I am for this week's
Tam has
episode.
Been talking to me about. How I mean, I know that the entire fandom is pretty excited about next week's episode, especially like there's clearly like a hour night heart to heart thing because Rick's gonna get his little intervention. Yeah, I'm excited. I don't sound excited because it's currently 1:19 a.m.
Yeah,
but I am excited.
I'm not really excited for the staff drama. Like, I'm not excited for Sylvester crying all over again.
No.
But I'm excited for...
Excited for the JSA, like the core four.
Yes.
I'm because they seem like they're going to be in a lot of
for
scenes
reaction.
Consistently.
Yeah.
I'm excited for Artemis.
Yes.
To do
and
something.
I
don't know exactly
alliance.
If
she... I want to see who her alliances are. Like, who does she talk to? Like, what does she do? Like,
Yeah, like I am intrigued with what's the story there. I'm excited for Jakeem's little moment, whatever that's going to be. I don't really get why Cindy's a part of their team. Like, I get it for story purposes, but I don't really get her motivation, if that makes sense.
I think she got freaked out. And she was tired of, like, living life in the forest. So she was like, oh,
she's still not a lizard. Like, how are they going to resolve that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Can Thunderbolt just, like, wish her to not be a lizard? And then I'm excited to see what the hell Cameron is doing. Because, like, what is that boy doing? Yeah. I never know what that boy is doing. He confounds me.
I am almost more excited. Oh, no, I'm not more excited. I'm equally excited to see what it is that brings Rick back to the Whitmore Dugan's house than the actual intervention itself. Like, I want to know what brings him there.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what is it that makes him actually understand?
I jokingly said that he was going to crash his car, and Cam got very
nervous. I freaked out. I was like, oh no, not the car. But it would make sense that would work.
On that note, you can follow the show at Star Squadcast on Tumblr, Twitter, Instagram. You can follow me. I'm Cameron at Blue Valley Breaking News on Tumblr or Ice Hour Night on Twitter.
You can follow me, Tam, at Our Nights on Tumblr or That Killer Vibe on Instagram or TKV Our Nights with an S on Twitter.
Thank you so much for listening. We will be releasing our penultimate episode next week. We might try to get it out a little bit earlier just because for the finale episode, I don't think it makes that much sense to release it the Wednesday after the finale. So stay tuned. We might release that early and then have like a bonus wrap-up episode that Wednesday or like the following Wednesday. I don't know. Our schedule is going to get a little wonky as the season wraps up. But thank you so much for listening, and we will see you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.